As I said earlier, I'd go to Atlanta to play with those guys, and mm-hmm. I was up there one time. I don't remember what kind of mailing I had then. It was a good one. Oh, it might have been a Gibson A-model. I had a Gibson A-model earlier. And Ron got to telling me about this man and about Dr. Griffiths and the Griffiths School of Music there in Atlanta, and about this Manlin over there in a shop in Decatur. I think it was down on consignment. Mm-hmm. And I told Ron, I said, I'd like to see it. So we go over to the music shop. And it's in there. And it was an F5, you know, F5 Manlin. It was Dr. Griffith's personal Manlin. Mm-hmm. The Griffith School of Music was Dr. Griffith and his wife and either one or two sisters. Mm-hmm. And they lived in this big old house down on Bonaventure Avenue. House is still there. Seemed like to me it was two or three stories in the basement. I don't remember exactly. But anyway, we go and look at it. And then they were going to sell it for her. And I said, Ron, I don't remember what kind of price they had on it. I said, I'd pay more than that for this man. And he said, well, you want to go to the house? I said, yeah. So we go over there. Ron, and somehow or another, Ron and Don both had met Dr. Griffith. Mm-hmm. And was familiar with the folks. But I never got to meet Dr. Griffith personally because I think he had died. But his sister lived there in the house. And Ron introduced us, you know, and we talking about instruments, and I told her about the instrument over there in the store. I said, now, I'd like to buy that. I said, I'll pay you more in that store, Will. And I said, it'll be more appreciated. Mm-hmm. So we agreed on the price. I wish I could safely say what that was. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about $250, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, she says, well, I'll go get it. Said, you going to be coming back? I said, yeah. When you want me to come back? And I said, I'll be back up next week. So she got it. She had it at the house. And somehow or another, Ron had a Gibson catalog or two that he got now. And so we both asked her, whatever, about some Gibson catalogs. She said, well, let's go out back. And they had a little two-room wooden building there that evidently they taught students in and stored stuff. And built that whole, both of those rooms were full of sheet music, catalogs, magazines, everything related to Gibson. See, Gibson didn't have a dealer network then. No. They had, in other words, they were the Gibson dealers, representatives, I should say, from the whole Southeast.
Right.
And they had, they sold, repaired, and taught all these instruments.
Right.
And at that particular time, Gibson had a cabinet that they gave to representatives. Mark has the original one now from the Griffiths. I got it.
Oh, okay.
And it's a full of drawers with mm-hmm. pigeonholes and
right.
and a couple of wings that let out on each side to make your table.
Mm-hmm.
And then a thing that put all the tubes in. But anyway, I bought that from Ron. And Ron was telling me about the catalog. So we go out there and check on the catalogs. And they had a magazine that Gibson published called The Sounding Board Salesman.
Hmm.
It was all about Gibson, all about the instruments.
Right.
And neat thing about it, in the back of it was a list of lost or stolen instruments. So if you got an F4 Manlin with 2610 serial number, you know, and then you could pretty much date them by that, you know. And I had a bunch of those, and I finally let them go. But very few people have ever heard of the Sounding Board Salesman. But it was a publication put out by Gibson. A wealth of information. They talked about people that played the instruments and schools and all this stuff. Very, a lot of factual good information in there.
Yeah.
And I got to going through them catalogs. I got a machine myself, and she had Gibson put out a color catalog, a catalog that had color inserts in it of the Bella Voce and Florentine Manlins.
Right. Mandolin.
I mean, I'm not no.
Banjo.
Scratch
yeah.
that, man. Banjo.
Oh, okay.
You can tell I got mandolins on the brain.
Yeah.
But now Gibson did make a bella voce banjo mandolin.
Well, that's what I, when you mentioned that, I thought, now wait a minute, I have heard of some of these others with particular designs and
yeah.
so on that had that.
But anyway, I bought a whole pile of catalogs.
Oh.
And I should have went back. I could probably have bought the whole house full of stuff. But what do I know about catalogs? Not much.
Yeah.
You know, but I learned right quick.
Uh-huh.
When I found out.
Yeah.
And I learned lately, too. The original ones are pretty hard to come up. Of course, they got to reproducing them, you know,
right.
a few years
right.
back.
Right.
But anyway, in the course of conversations with her, she says, you know, since I got another mandolin upstairs.
Uh-huh.
And she said, we got other instruments. They even had a banjo bass. Huge banjo bass.
Some of those.
I got a couple of little Martin guitars from them. I don't remember what they were and some other stuff. And so she comes down with this mammoth. You know.
Huh.
And she said, yes. No, she said, I got another F5. So she comes down, goes up and comes back down, and she's got this A model mammoth.
Uh-huh.
I look at it, I never seen one before.
All right.
But I knew it was something extra special because it had a long neck on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mandolins back then joined 12 fret,
mm-hmm.
other than the 5.
Right, right.
So anyway, I looked in it, you know, and saw the labels and saw F5. And so she sold it to me. I took it home and just loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Played it for about a year or so, it seems to me, before somebody up at Ron's house one night, at Don's house, looked in there and said, man, said, that ain't no F. Said, that's an A. I said, let me see. And sure enough, it's an A.
Oh.
But it looked like they might have put F and then put an A
right.
over it.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of good pictures of that label around.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. So I just fell in love with it, and I played it for a long time, you know, with my pride and joy. Hate to let it go. And I've got a special tape somewhere in my collection. Me and Vassal was at Pickin' Paul one day. And I come up with this new tune. It was either Oconee or the Griffith Mandolin Society.
Uh-huh.
Mandolin tune that I'd written.
Right.
And Vassal was going to learn it on the fiddle. So I got the complete tape from the very first. I played it and played it and played it. And he began to come in there with all that stuff. And he finally got it developed, you know. Oh, and then what does he do? He takes the mandolin and plays it on the mandolin. Well, his old fingernail is right below the fingerboard. Guy's in there a little bit.
Mm.
You know, nothing bad,
right.
And it's still on there.
Yeah, yeah.
He did that.
Huh.
Well, that's a great, and he just played, man.
Mm.
Okay.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the history of the A4 mandolin while we're...
The A what?
I'm sorry, the A5 mandolin. I keep wanting to refer to it as an A4, but it's an A5.
Yeah, we were talking about the Griffith School of Music a while ago. And as I said, Dr. Griffith's wife taught, as well as his sisters and as well as himself. And she would use, when she had a mandolin student, a group of mandolin students, she would borrow his F5. And when she sat down to play it, the point stuck in the leg and it was uncomfortable for her.
Mm-hmm.
So Dr. Griffiths ordered her an F5 without the points, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it was. All, you know, the fingerboard, everything, the finish, the wood, everything is identical to the F5. The body style is a little different, three or four characteristics. That mandolin has that the other mandolins don't have. Now, they just made the one. Now, Bob Gibbons, whom I met back in the late 60s, early 60s, no, early 60s, was a craftsman, one of the best I've ever seen. Anyway, he started making A5s. Now, he's the first, basically what he's got there is an A-style body.
Mm-hmm.
With a 15 fret neck, other than 12 fret,
mm-hmm.
You got the F5s, all the 5s join at the 15th fret, and the other ones are 12 fret. So what he did is put the long neck on a model. Mm-hmm. And that was the first A5, you know, in modern times. He built it. Mm-hmm. And of course, since then, everybody's building them. But nobody's ever built one to the exact size.
Right.
Because nobody never did have access to the mainland mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. anything else about it except me and Mark.
Right.
But Mark, when I had it way back, Mark took all the measurements and everything. He's had them all these years.
Oh.
And when we got the mainland back for a while, he was inspired. We were all inspired to do something about it, which we did, you know.
Uh-huh.
Got all kind of measurements, all kind of everything off of it. I even x-rayed it. And took it over here to the hospital and got a buddy of mine to x-ray it, to locate the tone bars and stuff like that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just quite a mainland. Like I said, Lynn Dudenbosser. Do you know Lynn? He used to work at Oak Ridge. He builds guitar, builds the Madeline building.
Name sounds familiar.
Yeah, he lives in Knoxville.
I've never met him.
Anyway, I was going to go to, I talked to Mike Compton. I approached Mike at Merlefest about what he'd like to do a video playing the A5.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yeah. So we got the old time picking faller on the afternoon. And I told Lynn Dudenbosser about it. And a friend of Lynn's from up north, someplace, was coming down to bring his lower F5 mm-hmm. for Lynn to work on. And Lynn says, well, can he go along? And I called Lynn to ask him if he wanted to ride over where I could ride with Lynn.
Mm-hmm.
And so this guy was there. And Lynn says, yeah, he'll take you. Okay, so in the meantime, he called two or three more F5 people.
Right.
So we ended up there with about five or six lower mammons. And so Mike, you know, done his thing, and then we had all these guys, we all got up on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
Every guy took his mammon, his lower mammon, he played a team. Mm-hmm. And then they took the A5 and played the team.
Right.
And Ricky Skaggs came down later and played it, and I've got some footage of me and him playing, and it's a great.
Uh-huh.
But Mike done that, and then somehow or another, in the second half of it, someone turned a monitor or something on and got a buzz in it.
Oh.
And I'm waiting on Jeff Hall. Do you know Jeff Hall?
Oh yeah.
Well, waiting on Jeff to.
Uh-huh.
Jeff came up and taped it. See.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Videoed it. Yeah, for me.
Uh-huh.
But he got that noise on that second one of them tapes, and he's supposed to have already gotten it out for him, but he ain't done it, so I can't do nothing with him until I get rid of that noise.
Yeah, he's probably running through a filter of some kind. Okay, good.
I was able to get the lower back.
Uh-huh.
And Cindy, at this particular time, I was talking about the bicentennial
uh-huh.
when we lost everything we had. Uh-huh. That's when I sold it.
Uh-huh.
I sold it. And I always regretted it, you know, but I had no other choice.
Right.
So, years ago, I was able to borrow it back. Now, Randy Snoddy, friend of mine, lives out in California that I got to collect an influence long years ago. I let him have it, and he let a friend have it. And he always told me when I'd go out to see him, I said, Randy, I said, I'd love to go up and see the mammon and play it. He said, well, it's a long ways up there, and besides, he ain't the kind of a guy, you know, that would want you to play it. So Ren is my good close friend, one of the close ones I got. So I took him at his word. So I don't know why, you know, a while back, I found this. Ren gave me his phone number, and I called him, I told him, and he said, "Yeah," I said, "sir, you can borrow it." So at first, I was going to fly out to Randy's.
Uh-huh.
He was going to meet me there, and I was going to bring it back.
Right.
That feels a lot. So he says, I'll ship it. And I call Mark and tell Mark to tell me how to pack it. So,
uh-huh.
No, I told him how to pack it. I called Mark. So he took the case and wrapped it in bubble.
Right.
And put that bubble wrap case in the box. Wrapped that box in bubble. Put it in a big box. Cost $250 to ship.
Mm-hmm.
But it come wow. in. I swear I just fell in love all over again. It sounded exactly the same hadn't aged a bit. And I got to getting friends to play it. Uh-huh. Now, Bill, it'll take you a day sometimes to listen to all the people who played that matter. Uh-huh. And I got them to play it. And in the meantime, I wrote a new tune for it. The Marilyn had been away 27 years, I think it was. So I wrote a new tune called The Prodigal Five, uh-huh. You know, like right. The Prodigal Son.
Right, exactly.
And a cute tune. So I got a whole video of Mike Compton playing it, done over to Pick and Paul. Me and Mike are going to release wherever. Uh-huh. And I don't know how many people played it. Uh-huh. And I played it with seven different lower players playing it, you know, over there, all I had lowers.
Right.
That man has got a tone that none of them don't have.
Yeah, yeah.
I always say it's the best in the world. Uh-huh. And I don't care whether they believe me or not.
Yeah.
I think it's the best. Because I see, another thing too, getting back to Bill Monroe for a minute or two. Uh-huh. The first time I ever met him, and he knew I played Marilyn, he'd stick his banner out to me and say, play me a tune. Every time uh-huh. I ever saw him. Now, I realized later why Bill did that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we both know. But anyway, and I played it for years, and that's a great man, but if they were both laying there, you know, I wouldn't touch his. I mean, for a sound. It's the same everything, except it's sweeter.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So Mark and I decided that we'd go ahead and make this replica. So I put it on the list. Uh-huh. A little story about it. And I said, now, if you're interested in knowing more about it or whatever, I said, send me an email. Uh-huh. I put it in the file. I got a file in under that pretty big.
Yeah.
So I put an update on the commando list every once in a while about it. And they still don't know how much it's going to cost or when it's going to be ready. And somebody asked me, and said, come on, I said, how much is it going to cost? I said, all the way there, honest with you. I said, it's going to cost us to hide sounds. Mm-hmm. I said, if it's got that sound close, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
I said, the more expensive it's going to be.
Yeah.
You know, we made it just like it. The only difference, the end of the peg head, it does that. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to do that. Mm-hmm. Can't copy the peg head. Gibson.
Right.
And Mark and Gibson had several suits together about things.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, so I'm supposed to go to Nashville next week and pick on it.
Oh.
They're going to have it rough, I mean, ready to put the finish on it.
Okay, prototype you're talking about? Or?
Yeah, no, he's building two.
Oh, okay.
And the reason we're building two, okay, so I said, yeah, Bill, play this mandolin and see what you think about it. Said, that sounds pretty good. I said, well, what's the next one going to sound like? Mm-hmm. I said, wait a minute, Bill. I said, yes, yeah, the next one, play it.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, good. That's the reason we're doing it, too.
Yeah.
Besides, Mark wants the first one. I mean, I want the first one, and Mark wants the first one.
Yeah.
I'm going to have one A, but he's going to have one B.